No, ještě nevím, to jsem představil.
Sequence of sinful reactions. But one way is that due to avidya, we identify with this body, and therefore we become subjected to the influence of papam, or we should say bijam first, sinful desire. And then sinful desire, when we become attached to that, it leads to sinful activity. And sinful activity leads to aparabdha karma, unmanifested reactions, or manifested reactions, both come. Some of them are called parabdha and some are aparabdha karma. We get some reaction called parabdha karma, but that's not the whole story. Some of it is stored as aparabdha karma, or reactions we'll suffer for in the future, or enjoy. And that manifests itself as kutam, or a sinful inclination, which later on, not even in one birth, but maybe in the next birth, manifests itself as sinful desire, and because of avidya, it goes on. We go on with the papam, bijam, papam, aparabdha, parabdha karma, and kutam, and it just goes in a circle perpetually. And the only way of actually breaking out of the circle is by vidya, by knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna praises transcendental knowledge. Apiched sudaracharo, apiched apisarve, apiched sarve papebhya, sarve bhya papakrita maha, sarvam jnana planevaiva, vrijinam santarishasi. Even if you're considered to be the most sinful of all sinful persons, if you are situated on the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can easily cross beyond the ocean of material existence. Itai dam so samrido ganir basmat sat kuru te jana ganagni sara karmani basmat sat kuru te tata. Just like the blazing fire can turn firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes all the reactions for our sinful activities. Of course, that knowledge means knowledge of Krishna, ultimately. By coming in contact with Krishna, then ultimately all the different coverings over us, all the coverings due to our past activities, they get burnt away in the fire of transcendental ecstasy. Some of those ecstasies are mentioned here in this verse, such as vibhava, anubhava. Vyabhichari bhava, sattvika bhava, which is also known as stayi bhava. So these are different bhavas. Should be five of them, I think. Vibhava, anubhava, vyabhichari bhava, sattvika bhava, and stayi bhava. So these five different classifications of bhavas are added together and they produce rasa, transcendental exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, which are of the basis of transcendental ecstasy and love. So here in the material world, we're working on what's called, instead of rasa, arasa, lack of rasa. But it appears, because it's a reflection of the actual rasa, it appears that there's rasa here. But actually there's not rasa here, because due to avidya or ignorance, we're mistaking the reflection for the reality. And we think the reality is the reflection. They think that out of people's frustration to be happy here, they've invented the spiritual world in their imagination. They have so many, you know, God is an anthropomorphic creation, that people would see that the sun would rise in the morning and set in the evening. They thought it was swallowed by the ocean, and maybe some demon ate it, and then in the morning it would be reborn again. So out of so much speculation, so many ideas have been created, including one of those is that there is a God in the spiritual world, etc. But actually, it's the other way around, that this world is a reflection of the spiritual world, not that the spiritual world is a reflection of the material world. But due to lack of knowledge, people have concluded this. And therefore, instead of engaging in the rasa of exchange with Krishna, we've taken another deity, It is not that we don't have a deity. The living entity by nature has to have a deity, a worshipable object. Instead, we've taken this body as our worshipable deity. And we bathe it so many times a day, hopefully. Sometimes people neglect the deity. They don't bathe. But generally all the people, they at least offer the deity some food every day. They make sure it's warm, nicely decorated and clothed. They try to get it glorified. They try and spread its fame. So everyone's dedicated to a deity. Unfortunately, everyone's deity is different from everyone else's deity. Therefore, there can't be any harmony in this world because everyone else ultimately has a different object of worship. And the reason why we love this deity is that we think it'll make us happy. So actually, we don't even love the body. We love ourselves within the body. And actually, we're just part and parcel of Krishna. Our real love is for Krishna, of which we're just a little particle. But because we're not aware of Krishna, therefore we've, instead of directing our loving propensity towards Krishna, we've externalized it in so many things based upon the bodily concept of life. With some knowledge, we can see that Krishna, it is not his fault that we're here. It is not, he's neutral. To those who are interested in material life, he awards them according to their activities and desires. But in the spiritual world, Krishna says, or on the spiritual platform of consciousness, then, name dveshti sta na priyaha. Ye bhajanti tumam bhakta mai te teshu chapyaham. There, Krishna, he loves the devotees, and the devotees love Krishna. There's a reciprocation of love between Krishna and his devotees. It's not like that of the material world, where according to what you do, you get an immediate reaction either immediately or in the future. But in the spiritual world, everyone is engaged in loving service to Krishna, and they try to love Krishna a little, but Krishna loves them much more. Prabhupada used to say that if you make one step towards Krishna, then he makes 100 steps towards you. It is not a equal reciprocation. Krishna is much more anxious to get the devotees back than even the aspiring devotees to go back. Because after all, what do we know of the spiritual world? We can read about it a little bit in the books, but to actually experience it, that is not so easy. To understand the ecstasy and in the loving reciprocation between the devotee and Krishna is very hard to understand. It's impossible to understand. Unless one actually comes to the platform of prema. And even bhava would be very difficult to understand. Srila Rupa Goswami said, adau shraddha. So in the beginning we have a little faith. That's a little taste. Adau means in the beginning, and shraddha, sadha. Da means to put. So wherever we're putting our attention, we're getting experience. And according to that experience, it may be nice, it may be not very pleasant. And therefore, we have an idea about that object that we're experiencing. And according to that experience, we have a certain opinion. That's our actual faith. And the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sadvana rupa sarvasya shadhat bhavati bharata shado yo 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 purusho yo yat strata seva saha. That according to one's conditioning under the modes of nature, one has already evolved a certain type of faith. As soon as we got this body, along with the body was a certain type of faith. Due to our past experiences, we have a certain experience now. Of course, this is an artificial faith because we're covered by the modes of nature. It's not our natural faith or our original faith. Nevertheless, we have a certain opinion and idea and experience. We have a certain idea and opinion based upon our present experience. And when we act according to that, often people's ideas match their experience. They actually believe what they're experiencing is real. So much so, even when he's intoxicated, still he thinks that's real. But by hearing some knowledge, then we can find out that what I'm hearing what I'm experiencing is different from what I'm experiencing. Now, which is right? Is it correct that we're spiritual beings and that we're an illusion? Or am I actually awake and it's an illusion that I'm a spiritual being? Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Yani shasa rabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sani shapashutomune. What is night for all sentient beings is a time of awakening for the self-control. And what is night for the self-controlled is the time of awakening for all sentient beings. So the person who's in material life, he thinks that sense gratification is reality. And this idea of a spiritual life is just like a dream. And a person who's awake in spiritual consciousness, he knows that spiritual consciousness is the reality, and people are just needlessly dreaming about so-called happiness in the material world. Now, how can we judge? Well, most people can't really judge because they have no experience of anything other than their present existence. Now, the only way they can actually find out whether or not what's being explained is real or not, that we're actually spiritual souls, etc., is at least in the beginning they have to listen. If they've already made the conclusion, just like in this presidential race, they say that so many people made their conclusion about one candidate or another, but there's undecided people, which is a smaller percentage of the people. So they may be swayed. So the candidates, they don't waste their time trying to convince people who are already convinced. They try to convince people who are not convinced. So similarly, if people are completely convinced that what they're experiencing is real, and there's no other reality beyond that other than some illusory conception of reality, then it's very hard to convince them. On the other hand, if someone's a little doubtful, just like it is said, when someone's in distress, then they may approach a devotee and inquire to find out, why am I in distress, at least. At least that question has to arise. Anyone who thinks that this world is great, we're having a great time here, let's just keep on going on and party, then they're not going to be very inquisitive to find out about some other place, which they'll think is imaginary. But when people think that I'm not having a good time, maybe I should inquire, is there another place where I could have a better time? So this is Jignasya Shreya Uttama, about my real purpose of life, Brahma Jignasya, Atarto Brahma Jignasya. Then they inquire. And it may not match up. The philosophy and one's experience may not match. But that's why we're supposed to develop our intelligence, so that we can see, at least intellectually, and we can understand why there's a difference between what I'm perceiving now and what's being explained to me. And we can't always see everything that's being explained. I mean, we can't even intellectually understand many things. Different Bhagavad Gita Krishna always starts with the body's changing. So that's something that everyone can perceive. And we ourselves within the body, we're not changing. So from that basis, there's a transcendental awareness that's invoked immediately that, yes, I am transcendental. I'm different from the body. Now, whether or not, you know, there is trees on a Plakshadweep, which are 100,000 yojanas that have mangoes the size of elephants, and when they drop, they form rivers that come down to the shore of the ocean of milk, and when they're baked by the sun, it turns into gold, and the demigods go there and they collect the gold there to make their ornaments. Now, whether or not that's true, it actually doesn't really change the fact that I'm not my body. But obviously, at least I can say, I can't tell you whether it's true or not. I can't remember being by the shore of Plakshadweep and diving into the ocean of mango juice. Or what to speak of, you know, taking pictures of the demigods coming down to collect the gold. But it's not actually so relevant, nor is it really, that's not what Bhagavatam is trying to give us faith in. Is trying to give us faith in transcendence so that we can perform what we can do here to actually develop a different experience, a different type of faith. So in the beginning, there's a little faith. That means that people get a little experience, a little knowledge, something that makes them a little bit more inquisitive to associate with the devotees, find out, what is this all about? What are they talking about? Maybe I can get a little bit more of that prasad. Maybe I can at least learn the recipe. Then when they associate with devotees, they hear the glories of Krishna explained. They hear the philosophy, the glories, or experience, whatever explained. And then they may become interested in following the process by which they can awaken a different experience. And while they're performing that process, there are so many mental obstacles that come in their way, which was explained in Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura's literature, such as Taranga Rangini, Bhikshepa, so many different things that stand in one's way, that we may in the beginning become puffed up, it is said, utsahamayi, puffed up with enthusiasm, thinking, I've already experienced everything in 2 weeks. I'm in ecstasy, I know everything. But then after a while, there's other stages where one finds out that we go up and down, that it's not always up, there's some down there. That I'm not always in ecstasy, sometimes I get morose. So this is called unstable. And then one may become a little bit more stable, and one may become distracted by so many different ideas. Garanga Tarala, etc. War against sense gratification, Viyuta Vikalpa, mental speculation, should I do this, should I do that, should I do this other thing, as if it really matters that much. As if my consciousness is not so important, what I'm doing is important. In any case, there are many different phases of devotional consciousness in bhajana kriya, and then one comes gradually to the stage of getting to the real problem, which is called anartha nivritti, of which all the different types of anarthas, chanting the holy name with some attention, with some faith, with some love. So that brings one to the stage of becoming, when one chants Hare Krishna, realizes that Krishna is the goal, that I don't have to speculate what's going to happen, I don't have to worry about what's going to happen, because all I have to do is worry about whether or not I'm Krishna conscious or not. If I'm Krishna conscious, it won't matter what's happening. And if I'm not Krishna conscious, it won't matter what's happening either. So the real point is that I have to become Krishna conscious, then one can come to the stage of nishtha. It doesn't mean that at the stage of nishtha there's no more external problems. It wasn't that the poor Pandavas, they hadn't quite met nishtha, therefore they were being fed poison, they were put into a house of lack and set on fire, they were just problem after problem. No, nishtha means that in spite of all the good times and the bad times, I'm faithful to Krishna. Then one can actually focus his attention upon Krishna and feel his presence. One comes to this platform of ruchi. There's a real experience of Krishna. And Krishna is rasa vaisaha. He's taste. He's the source of all kinds of transcendental mellows. So in one's spiritual senses, atyantikam yattad buddhi grayam atendriyam veti yatrana chayayam sitam chalati tatvataha. One thinks that there is no greater gain in experiencing that, and even in the greatest difficulty, one is not shaken, because one sees that it doesn't matter what's happening. There's no taste in the material world, it's just a shadow. There's just a shadow. Whoever takes this, there's a pin in there somewhere. It's just a little dangerous.
Pin prick everywhere.
This world is just a shadow, but until we actually experience at least a little ruchi, a little taste, aparada guchi, shudaname ruchi, that until we come to the stage of getting free from some offenses enough to get some taste, then this world appears to be real, because that's all we have. There's nothing else to experience. But then after ruchi, when the taste gets a little bit more intense, we become attached. We can't give it up because it's so sweet. That even if the mind, for a moment, wanders away from Krishna consciousness, then immediately comes back. It can't live without Krishna. Just like a fish cannot live without water. Now, if our mind wanders to Krishna somehow or another, immediately Maya withdraws it away from Krishna. But there, if for a moment, for some reason or another, the mind withdraws away from Krishna, immediately the mind goes back. So that's quite a different experience than we have now. And it's not due to some mechanical process of practicing, put it on Krishna, put it on Krishna. It's due to the intense happiness that one experiences by associating with Krishna through the process of service and remembrance. Then that matures in bhava, which is the beginning of uttama adhikari, actual pure devotional service. And bhava is considered to be one drop in the ocean of prema. So when bhava is multiplied unlimited times, it manifests itself as prema. So prema is such that even in the midst of the greatest difficulty, like Pariksha Maharaj, he was cursed to die. But we don't find Pariksha lamenting, oh, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Is there any medical insurance? What about snake bird poison, venom, antidote? Is there anyone who can, you know, I'll give you half my kingdom for some snake bird poison antidote. And he was undisturbed completely. He sat down to hear the Bhagavatam. And he was so absorbed in the Bhagavatam, he forgot about eating and sleeping. Not that he thought, you know, 5 days left, you know, I should get some rest. No, he was so much in ecstasy, he didn't even know when he was leaving his body. He didn't know if he was in his body or out of his body, because he was in the spiritual world by the time he finished hearing the Bhagavatam. So that's prema. And prema is just the beginning. Prema is further intensified in sneha, mana, pranaya, bhava, or raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava. And mahabhava has different stages also. Maharuda, mahabhava, etc. So we have a lot to look forward to. It's not that we've experienced everything. We've already got the best we could out of the Krishna consciousness movement, and not much to look forward to, just kind of struggle along until we leave our body, and then we go in our next body, and hopefully we become a devotee and struggle along again, eating prasadam and whatever else. No, we have unlimited happiness to look forward to. We haven't even touched the ocean. We haven't even practically got to the shore of the ocean of happiness, of devotional service. We're just finding our way through the woods of material existence, getting lost in the woods sometimes also. Maya's put up so many different signs. Go this way, you'll get there. Go that way, you'll get there. So after a while, when we figure out where the map is, we get a good map and a good compass, then gradually we'll find our way to the shore of the ocean of happiness, and eventually we can enter into it. So here it says that Krishna, he reciprocates with the devotees, and when they come to this platform of actually vibhava means... It's a complicated subject, which is explained in the second heart, part of the nectar of devotion. Vibhava has two different aspects, known as alambana and udipan. And amongst the alambana, there's vishaya and ashraya. But a simple example can be used that the reservoir of love in a parental relationship, the reservoir of love, which is called the ashraya of love, is the mother, for instance. And the vishaya, the object of love, that's the child. And this is called alambana. And then udipana are things that awaken within the ashraya, feelings of love towards the vishaya. So the mother, when she sees the little shoes of her child, some feelings of love awaken within her, because the little shoes remind of her child. And then her heart starts beating more rapidly, tears of love come to her eyes, and that's called Anu, Anu Bhava. That the, or she may pick up her child, at least in the Veda culture, smell the child's head, kiss the child. So this is called Anubhava. Subsequent ecstasy and activities due to her voluntary activities due to her love for the child. And then involuntarily tears may stream from our eyes like torrents of rain due to her intense love. So this is called Sattvika Bhava. There may be some shivering in her body. So this is called Sattvika. Involuntary physical reactions due to the life airs becoming disturbed during her intense thoughts of ecstasy and love for her child. So they manifest themselves externally as physical reactions. When the ecstasy disturbs the mind, and then the mind disturbs the life air, and the life air disturbs the elements, then different physical symptoms are manifested. When the earth element is disturbed due to the ecstasy, then one is stunned. When the water element is disturbed, then tears come to the eyes. When the air element is disturbed, there's shivering in the body, etc. And then there may be some instance where the child is in a precarious position. It's crawling on the edge of the window, about to drop into the street. So the love for the mother takes a different turn. It manifests itself in a different way as intense fear, intense dread for the safety of her child. So this is also another aspect of ecstasy. In the spiritual world, at least. Here it may not be exactly the same, but this is just an analogy. And then her steady ecstasy, of course, her mood is called Stayi Bhava. That is, she's always in the mood of a mother. She doesn't think she's the grandfather. She always thinks that the mother. So that's called Stayi Bhava. So these things are manifested even in the material world, but they're factually, fully, properly, or originally manifested in the spiritual world in the relation between Krishna and his devotees. Once one comes to the platform of Prema Bhakti, then his original Stayi Bhava is as deep as the ocean. His relation with Krishna is as deep as the ocean. And in the ocean, there are many different manifestations of waves, and there is caused by the wind and the different atmospheric conditions, etc., etc. So these are compared to the different bhavas, vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, vyabhichari bhava. They create different waves in the ocean of love between Krishna and his devotees. But that original love that one feels towards Krishna due to one's relation with Krishna is always steady. Just like in spite of all the movements on the surface of the ocean creates varieties, but the underneath the ocean is always the same, undisturbed by all the wind or the rain or the different climactic or the waves on the ocean. So when one establishes one's original relation with Krishna, when we wake up again, we find out who we factually are, and that love for Krishna and our relation with Krishna is revived, then we never again will, that's all we think about. Just like now, we can see, although we have nothing factually to do with the body, we're so much in love with it, that's all we think about. If someone tells you, don't, just get it detached from your body, don't worry about it. Can we do that all of a sudden without attaching ourselves to something else? So here comes around here there's nothing dangerous. Here comes a car to hit my body, but I'm not at all attached to my body, so I don't care if it hits my body or not. I'm not going to step out of the way. No, because of our love for the body, immediately, vyabhichari bhava, out of great concern, we immediately throw ourselves out of the way of the oncoming car. So our original feelings of love have now been centered around this body, and we can see how attached we are to the body. But when we center our attention back on Krishna, we'll become much more attached to Krishna than we are to this temporary body. So that's inconceivable. We can't now conceive of how we can be attached to anything other than this body. But that will be manifested in the due course of time. We find out that Krishna is much nicer than our body is. That attachment to Krishna, when we focus our attachment to Krishna, it's much more rewarding than how much effort we put into our service towards this material temporary body or in this material world, to our country, our society, our family, whatever. It's much more rewarding. And Krishna reciprocates. If we love him, then he reciprocates. Krishna is also, one of his opulences is that he's completely detached. He's vairagya. He has unlimited vairagya, which means that whatever he has, he offers his devotees. Therefore, when the devotee gives everything to Krishna, which we don't have so much, he gives everything to the devotee. And Krishna has unlimited. Therefore, the devotee actually gains. But as the devotee becomes attached, so attached to Krishna, that he's willing to do anything for Krishna, so Krishna becomes attached to the devotee, he's willing to do anything for the devotee. But he always feels himself in debt to the devotee, because Krishna has unlimited devotees to surrender to serve. He's bhakti-vatsal. But each devotee, his attention is focused completely on Krishna alone. So therefore, Krishna always feels himself in debt because he can't focus his attention, the same way to serve his devotee as the devotee is focusing his attention serving Krishna. Therefore, Krishna comes as a devotee to find out what it's like to focus his attention completely on serving himself. But still, he says, na paraha. I always remain the debtor to my devotee because I feel my service to them can't be equal to their service to me. So this is quite inconceivable. But in any case, we follow the process and gradually we'll be able to conceive of it and experience it, and then we'll understand it and our real faith will be awakened. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Well, the devotee should be grateful, it says, for Krishna is so nice, he's giving us so much. That one who's in knowledge, he realizes Krishna is so kind, he's giving me the air to breathe, he's giving me the sunlight, he's giving me so many things. The people who are ungrateful, doesn't matter what Krishna gives them, they're always ungrateful. He didn't give me enough. I think Sudama Vipra, he mentions that they complain that God's not giving them enough, that he has the rain come at night, and people don't think that they wake up in the morning, they don't see the rain, they think, why didn't God cause it to rain? I forget the example that Sudama gives, but he explains how people are just ungrateful. It doesn't matter what God gives them, they don't think it's enough. In other words, in the material world, you can't get enough. Even if you have $1 billion, you want $2 billion. If you have $2 billion, you want $4 billion. They always figure that Krishna, somehow or another, he hasn't given me what I really want, which is to become God, which we can't be. Therefore, we always feel dissatisfied. But that's not Krishna's fault, because he didn't want us to become God in the first place. So generally people here are ungrateful, but one should realize how kind Krishna is. Therefore, even when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tanaham dvishita kuran samsareshu nuranamam, shi pramyajas ramashubham asri shveva yonishu, that those who are envious, who are mischievous, the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the demoniac species of life. So that doesn't sound like a very nice God, you know, a person we should be thankful to. If you become a little envious, he casts you into the demoniac species of life. And then you sink lower and lower, and you can never achieve him. He just pushes you down and down and down. Wow, this is not the type of person you want to meet in a dark alley. Just pushes you down and down. But we have to look at it in context. It's not that Krishna wants us to go down and down and down. But if we want to take shelter of that mentality, of become envious and mischievous, then Krishna reciprocates with us and gives us what we want. If we want to become like an animal, then Krishna reciprocates and gives us the body of an animal. If we want to eat flesh, Prabhupada says, you want to, why go through all the problems having to cook? It's a big endeavor. You have to have a stove, you have to have a butcher shop, you have to slaughter the animal. It's like a whole thing, just to get a little flesh. So Prabhupada said, better to become a tiger. You save so much time. And you get it fresh. You don't have to worry about something stale. We never heard of a tiger getting indigestion from eating meat. Tigers don't get colon cancer. There's no reaction. It's much better to become a tiger if that's what you want to do. So Krishna is very kind. Krishna says, yes, become a tiger. Here's your body. You get a nice fresh tiger body. And you can eat fresh blood. Drink it. And it's very healthy for a tiger. It may not be healthy for us, but a tiger gets strong and healthy. So that's Krishna's kindness. And at the same time, one will gradually learn that even if you get the best possible body to eat meat, it's not such a good deal. Better to come back to the human form of life and eat some prasadam. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribo.
Most people are interested in worshipping demigods to acquire powers. Each demigod has a particular power. For instance, the demigod Indra, the king of heaven, has power to shower rain on the surface of the globe to give sufficient vegetation to the earth. This demigod is described in the Vedas, Vajrahastaha Purandaraha. Indra rules the water supply with a thunderbolt in his hand. The thunderbolt itself is controlled by Indra. Similarly, other demigods, Agni, Varun, Chandra, Surya, have particular powers. All these demigods are worshipped in Vedic hymns through a symbolic weapon. Therefore, it is said here, Mantra Lingair Vyavachinnam. By such worship, Karmis may obtain the benediction of material opulence in the form of animals, riches, beautiful wives, many followers, and so on. By such material opulence, however, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shabda Brahmani Dushpare Charanta Uruvistare Mantra Lingair Vyavachinnam Bhajantuna Viduparam. Despite the cultivation of Vedic knowledge, which is unlimited, and the worship of different demigods by symptoms of the Vedic mantras, demigod worship does not help one to understand the supreme, powerful personality of Godhead. These are the talks between Narada and King Prachina Barahi. So same Srila Vyasadeva, same Srila Vyasadeva, I said. Who had compiled. Other Shastras, Vedas, and Vedanta Sutra and Puranas and Mahabharata and Upanishads and so on, wherein he was kind of missing the point. He was missing Vasudevasya Mahimahina Anuvaranitaha. He was missing the glories of Vasudev. One who knows Vasudev is all in all, he knows. Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate. After many, many births and deaths, that is where you had been doing other worships, all sorts of worships. Michael Jackson, you don't have trouble with this demigod worship, but you have trouble with these Jacksons and other fellows you worship in the West. We worship demigods. But then why worship demigods? Once you have the power, you have the wealth, you have the riches, then what need is there of any worship? That makes sense? That's the idea. You worship demigods to get all these things, but if you have already achieved those, you are in business. You need not worship. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such material opulence, however, Prabhupada is concluding the purport. You worship demigods, okay, and then you get animals. You need animals. These are the Vedic times. You don't need cars. How rich you are is judged by how many animals, especially cows and the bulls and even horses and useful animals. Even dog is required. Very honest friend of Aminta Kukur. I'm your dog, we say. Why dog? Why not cat? Very honest friend, the dog is. Because of that quality, the dog has been picked up and mentioned. I would like to be your kukur, amito kukur. So animals are required. So more the animals, more rich you are. The more the land you have. So for this, and then beautiful wives and like that and so on. And now you have all these material opulences, but one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by acquiring all these things. like that, the human beings spend Bahunam, Janmanam, Ante, then if they are fortunate, then they come to conclusion, or whenever they come to conclusion that Vasudeva Sarvam, Vasudeva is all in all, iti, this much. How much you have to know? Vasudeva Sarvam, iti, this much.